trumpet, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Hopefully, we'll have Coach Maynard stopping by at the very tail end of the show. We'll pick his brain about the week zero, I guess, win against Altus. Look forward to the Bridge Creek game, first road game of the season for the Elks. So hopefully that's coming up right there at the tail end of the show, 9:45, 9:50-ish. There with Coach Zach Maynard of the Big Elks. Other topics, Big 12, breaking news this morning. They are entering into contract talks slash maybe negotiations early for their TV contract. What does that mean? I'll try to give you an idea, so you see what Jared thinks that could mean possibly for the conference. What are the top five games in order? 1 to 5. What are the top five games this week? As we've got games starting tomorrow night, Oklahoma State opening the season at Boone Pickens Stadium versus Central Michigan. So what are your top five? Also, who are some guys? And I used Phil Steele's All-Big 12 team to come up with this. So, you know, if a guy's on one, whatever. But the point being, who are some guys in the Big 12? I did some OSU guys. I did some OU guys. And then I picked somebody from another team that could be a postseason first-team All-Big 12 that weren't preseason selections. So who do you think basically is better than a lot of people think, or who will have a better season than a lot of people think they will have? Huge win in district softball yesterday for Elk City over Cash. Also, district standings for both 4A1 and 2A1. And if you don't know how the playoffs work in 4A through 2A, I'll tell you. Something that I didn't realize happened is in there as well. Maybe I did, but I'd forgotten it. And then some junior Elk football scores as well. Give a shout-out to one particular young man that had a nice game in his first time suiting up for the brown and white. That's what we got on the docket for today. If you got something else on your mind or you want to comment on those things, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. 225-9698. Give us a call. Excuse me. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. You can log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The Paragon Communications app is free. It's got all kinds of goodies. We're talking about three radio stations. The Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News, is on the website right now. ThePennyNews.com. Print edition will start filtering out this evening all the way across the area by this time tomorrow. You can go out and pick up a free copy of that Penny News. We've got Big Elk TV, Paragon TV. Note the game time change for the Elks on Friday night. It's originally scheduled for 7. That's going to be a 7:30 kick between Elk City and Bridge Creek. So 7:30 for Elk City and Bridge Creek instead of that 7 o'clock. Paragon TV will have Merritt taking on Cordell, and then Hollis gets going as well with their season coming up on Friday night on Paragon TV. And, of course, the Skinny on Sports podcast. You miss the show entirely. You can find us at KADSAM.com or iTunes. Hello, Jared.
Good morning.
How's it going? I need a glass of water after all that.
Yeah, you're running, man. You're going 100 miles per hour.
Got a whole bunch of stuff to fit in a tight window.
I'm telling you. We better get to it.
All right, we were.
Where to begin?
Seventh grade. We talked about the Junior Elks. We tried to find a name for them yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And almost got steered down the wrong path by one of our listeners. Glad we didn't fall into that trap that Jeremy had set for us.
Well, we can't say his name.
You did yesterday.
No, we can't. I thought about that.
Yeah.
Jay Robbins. Let's just call him that.
Oh, yeah. Nobody will know who that
is.
The seventh grade Elks went to El Reno and got a win 22-12. Riley Smith, first action as a big Elk, 2 rushing touchdowns. Listen, I got to see Riley last year as part of the SYL team that Wyatt played on.
Right.
And he can go. So no surprise to me that he starts out his seventh grade career with a couple of touchdowns rushing the football, because that dude can get it. I can promise you that. As long as the only thing that derailed him last year is maybe just forgetting his cleats. On a trip to Canadian, but you know what? That didn't even do it. We found some other ones, and boom, there he went. So he was good. Obviously, the Elks were good there. In the 7th grade, 22-12 over El Rito. The 8th grade team scored a bunch of points but gave up a bunch, 42-22. They fell to El Rito. Talking with one somebody that would know a whole bunch about it, one of the coaches, said El Rito probably the best team they'll face all year long. We actually saw a little bit of that in the scrimmage when we first got there to set up a couple Fridays ago. With that 8th grade group looking pretty good for El Reno. But the Elks getting better, and so we'll see how the season continues. But that's just a little update on the junior high football last night. Big win for Elk City on the softball diamond. The Elkettes shut out Cash 6-0 behind the right arm of Aubrey Pogue. And so Elk City keeps pace with Tuttle, and a huge game coming up tomorrow in Tuttle, the rematch of a game that Elk City won here a couple of weeks ago, or a week and a half ago, I guess, 5-3. They've got Tuttle coming up on Thursday. That will be for at least a share of the district lead in the loss column.
Yeah, it's big time, and gotta steal one on the road. Everyone's been protecting their home field. Gotta steal one on the road. So big opportunity for the Big Elks, or the Elkettes, excuse me.
As I mentioned last night, Aubrey shut out Cash. She threw the entire game. Let's see. I had this up, and then I've hit the wrong button. 7 innings. She gave up 5 hits. Didn't walk anybody. Struck out 3 in that shutout effort. A bunch of people had hits. Only Ella had 2. Had multiple hits. She was 2-for-4 with an RBI. Everybody up and down the lineup was 1-for-2, 1-for-3, and coaxed a walk or what have you. So, all the way up and down the lineup with 9 hits for Elk City last night, and a 6-0 win over Cash. So, as I mentioned, that puts them in a tie atop the 4A1 district standings with Tuttle at 5-1. Weatherford's lingering back there at 3-1. And, you know, it's the difference between winning the district is the difference between hosting a regional and having to go on the road somewhere to a district champ. So here's how this works. There's 8 regionals around the state because there's 8 districts. The top 3 in each district are guaranteed a spot.
Okay.
Then the 4th place team out of, say, District 1 will play the 5th place team out of District 2 in a best 2 out of 3 play-in series, just to get into regionals.
Now, that's interesting. I like a play-in game.
It's like a play-in series. It's a play-in series.
Yeah, I love it.
That's exactly what it is.
They do that all in one day, or is they play 2
oh, yeah,
on
I'm
one
sure.
day? Or...
I'm sure it's all in one day. But, you know, that makes that top 3 and last night's win even more important, because you drop that game to Cash last night, all of a sudden you're tied in the loss column with the Lady Bulldogs. A loss behind Weatherford and Tuttle, and kind of in a little bit more danger of playing in that play-in series. Now you're a full 2 games ahead in the loss column of Cash, and also have a win under your belt as a sort of tiebreaker there. So that was a really, really important win last night. But that's how that'll work. I had everything written down, and I've left it in there as far as district, you know, the second place team playing the winner of whatever, you know, whatever district it was down through there. And when you look down at District 2, you see the defending champs in Tecumseh. So that could be a, you know, maybe a road trip that you don't want to make. So a big game last night to win against Cash, and now that sets up an even bigger one coming up on Thursday when the Elkettes travel down and face Tuttle.
Yeah, that's going to be huge. And I didn't realize that play-in format. That's kind of fun. I kind of wish other sports kind of did something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean,
maybe not in football, but like basketball. Think about basketball where, okay, we got to have, you know, I mean, the NBA's kind of embraced it, right? And Major League Baseball in a way. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, basketball, everybody makes it, but football would be a perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
It, you know, it makes not only because it seems like, you know, in district at the end of the year, you know, week 9, week 10, it feels like every district around the state has games that are either for the title,
yeah,
or for that last spot. What if it was so jumbled up that the game for the title could also be, if you end up losing it, tumbling all the way down to, uh-oh, you're not really in the playoffs. Now you got to win a game to get there, to get into the bracket. I mean, all it does really is just add another week to the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's different thoughts about that with right. the amount of games. But, yeah, that'd be pretty cool. I mean, to give – and I think it would give the districts that are deeper, you know, a chance to really show that might. Because if you're fourth and fifth teams, both, you know, all of a sudden one district would have three teams, the other would have five. But the problem is it would also set up with the way the bracket is now. It could set up potential for games being played. Nah, I wouldn't either. Yeah, it could. Because if the fifth place team in District 1 beat the fourth place team in District 2, then you'd have a rematch mm-hmm. with the champ. So that might be a little bit unfair for the team that won the district. But anyhow, that'd be cool, though. It's any of those games or any of those series like that are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But so that's good news for the Elkett softball team. And I'll tell you what, 2A1 is jumbled up at the top as well with a couple of teams undefeated. Now, they haven't all played the same amount of games because of rainouts and this and that. Merritt and Minko are tied atop the standings with undefeated records. Minko's won six games. Merritt's won five. Hobart suffered their first loss of the district season last night to Mangum 5-1. So Hobart's in third, Mangum's in fourth. But see, this is where I noticed this. With Sayre at 4-5, they're way ahead of Walters, Frederick, and Cordell. And I got thinking, man, that kind of stinks. They're clearly better than well, guess what? They're going to have a chance to fight their way either into the fourth spot or, you know, it looks like, at least through most of the district schedule, that Mangum and Sayre will be the teams playing other District 2 teams in that play-in series.
Yeah. I mean, that's why that's made like that, to give a team like that who's having success a chance to get in there. I'm good with it.
That's kind of a rundown.
I'm good with it. I kind of neglected Merritt. I didn't realize they're having a real solid season.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
they are.
5-0 in the district. Solid 11-6 season. Yeah, shout out to the Oilerettes.
Yeah, and they missed the Hobart. It's supposed to play that game on Monday. And they missed it because of rain. And so now it's going to end up being a district doubleheader on September 12th. When you look at what they've got coming up, you know, the game against Sayre on, I guess, next Tuesday, then two against Frederick, who's at the bottom of the district. So they could conceivably be 8-0 ready to roll with Hobart. And then you got a couple of games against Cordell, which they ought to beat. And then all of a sudden the last series is Minko playing the last two district games. Could that be for that district title? Very well may could at the end of the season. Yeah, really good. You know, like you said, Sayre's been pretty strong as well,
mm-hmm.
Especially in district play. So that 7-12 overall, but 4-5 in district, that tells me they played an extremely tough, you know, schedule. And when you look at some of the teams playing up against Altus and Clinton, you can see why they've been a little bit better once they've been in district play. All right. Oh, I know. I found the AP poll.
I did too.
Oh, you got it?
Yeah.
Fire it off.
Oh, okay. Well, the Big Elks moved up a spot to number 9 after last week's win. Topping 4A is Tuttle, Poto, Clinton, Cushing, Wagner at the top 5. Blanchard in there, Bethany. I think Bethany's better than 7. Kind of feel like they are. Hilldale at 8, and of course Elk City 9, Broken Bow 10. If the poll extended, Newcastle would be 11, Weatherford would be 12, 8-13. Future opponent Carl Albert took a tumble. They're down at number 7 in Class 5A. And we'll keep an eye on them and how they do against, who do we say, Midwest City? Del City.
I think it's Midwest City.
Midwest City. Yeah. Midwest City, who's at number 10 in 5A. So that kind of gap narrows it. That could be a toss-up of a game. Other schools of interest, looking. Still looking. Let's see here. Fairview might be a dark horse for some.
I don't
Class
even think
A.
It's a, I don't even think it's a dark horse.
You think they are a contender?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're at 3. Hinton is at 7. Mangum cracking the top 10. They're at 10. Class B, Laverne 1. Shattuck 2. Sealing 3. You like Sealing, right? Class C, Timberlake, Tipton. Not a lot of shakeup there. Mountain View just outside, about number 6. They only go top 5 there. Bixby number 1 in Class 6A1. Stillwater. So
did that change?
No, they were number 1.
They were number 1 to start in that poll? Okay.
Yep. Jinx on their
heels. I knew some had Jinx, some
had
Bixby.
Well, I say on their heels. There's actually kind of a disparity there when it comes to the total points. 40, then 28. In fact, Union has 27. So they're saying it's closer to 2 and 3 than 2 to 1.
See, I'd heard Mark talking a little bit about this last week, and he's of the belief that Union is the main contender outside of Bixby this year instead of Jinx, which, you know, those kind of go back and forth a little bit. But after Jinx has won, what, the last 2, I think,
mm-hmm.
when they got back to the top of that mountain, I thought that was interesting.
5A, though, McAllister won. Coweta got
to jump
number,
way up, didn't
way
they?
Up to number 2. They even pulled in a first-place vote. So they turned a lot of heads. For our Clinton fans, Bishop McGinnis at 4, their next opponent.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Woodward and Guthrie play this week. Guthrie's at number 6 in 5A.
It's because the Jinx quarterback transferred to Union.
Oh, of course.
I forgot about that.
Yeah,
I did, too.
I mean, that made a lot of news up in northeast Oklahoma. Kind of misses our radar at times. There you go. I mean, not a lot of movement. We didn't suspect a lot of movement from teams that didn't play. I mean, it's not really fair to drop them because they didn't play last week, but it is fair to put someone like Coweta up there with the win that they had over Carl Albert.
Are you surprised Carl Albert dropped all the way down to 7? Do you think it's because DeQuasi broke his collarbone more than the fact that they lost?
I think it's both. I think it gives us the opinion I love the AP poll because it's what we do. It's, you know, how we think as media members. So I think a lot of people think that he is a big reason why Carl Albert would be good. And if he's out for the year, the opinion is Carl Albert might not be very good without him. But again, I always lean on you'd rather this happen now than say week 9 or 10 and then your season's derailed right before the playoffs. At least you have time to figure it out in the before the district starts, and then maybe get something going and make a push in the district. So, and it's still, again, I always lean on, it's Carl Albert. I just don't see them being a one-man band. I mean, they have a great program, always have. So that's where I'm not totally writing them off just yet.
No, I was interested, though.
But it is a big drop.
To see if they drop that far.
Yeah.
From 1 to 7 in that poll?
Yeah.
But I think if they just lose.
But the score, though, that's what stood
out
to me.
The score happened because he got hurt.
Yeah, but.
But those all go hand in hand, too. I think if they just lose and he doesn't get hurt.
I mean, did he play every position on defense? No. Did he?
He was safety. I mean,
well, that's one. That's just one.
But and the game was also close when he was playing.
Yeah.
Man, it starts in this state tomorrow night. What are we looking at? Like 20, like 30 hours? 8, 24, 32, so 30, 31 and a half hours away from OSU kicking off the season inside Boone Pickens Stadium against Central Michigan. You know, it made headlines about a month ago, I guess, leading into Big 12 media days, the lack of first-team participants on the All-Big 12 team from both Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, considering that a lot of people think they're for sure two of the top three favorites, if not the top two favorites, in the league going into the season. You know, the jokes were plentiful. Oh, you can only put a punter on there. After OSU dominating the postseason All Big 12 team a year ago with the losses on defense. So, you know, I guess there's reasons for that, and there's reasons that maybe we just haven't seen some of these guys enough to garner that interest. I used Phil Steele just because I had it handy right there on my desk. But for you, let's start with Oklahoma State since they're going to play first. Who are some guys that weren't on the first team, All Big 12 team in the preseason that you look forward to seeing on the All Big 12 first team in the postseason?
Well, I can't say Sanders because he's there.
Yeah, he wasn't in Phil Steele's. But he is, you know, that's why it's hard if there's about 14 of these teams out there. But anyhow, that's why I just used the one. But he was on the medium one, wasn't he?
Sanders?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's justifiable. I think he's one of the most experienced guys coming back. I want to say there's a safety. Taylor's on there. I'll start with you. Because, I mean, they put more on there than, obviously, OU. And the guys I keep going to, I'm looking at the list right now, to the media one, and they're there. Like, Colin Oliver's there.
See, he's not on Phil.
He's not on Phil.
My guys aren't on the Phil Steele.
That's funny. That's funny. The media one has, and then he's like, it's polar opposite. Who do you think?
I had Sanders and Oliver, which the media obviously agrees with.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sanders is an obvious candidate, just because for one, he was the returner. Here we go. I've got that list pulled up. Okay, so they didn't. Here's a lot of why Colin Oliver didn't make it on Phil Steele's. He actually put it instead of defensive line. First off, he just had four, but he also put them by position. So Will McDonald and Felix, however you say that, Azuma for Kansas State were the defensive ends. Like, he had defensive ends and defensive tackles and only had four, whereas the All Big 12 chickened out and put five and didn't put them in position. So that's part of that. You know, a guy like Brock Martin, we had Trace Ford brought up. Defensive line, though, our defensive end in this conference is just such a hard spot for multiple people to break through. I mean, Will McDonald's going to be the all-time sack leader by the time this season's over in the Big 12. He's going to break the record of Texas A&M guy. Golly, his name just flew out of my head. He's playing for the Bills.
Von Miller?
Yes, Von Miller. Will McDonald's going to break his record as the all-time sack leader in the conference. So that's, you know, that's a hard guy to leapfrog over outside of, you know, an unfortunate injury. Outside of those guys, you know, maybe a receiver. If one of the receivers steps up,
one's come to mind.
I mean, they got a bunch of them. That's the problem.
Yeah, but the one name I kept hearing last year at key times, in returning, I think could have a big year is Brennan Presley.
Yeah, and see, and he wouldn't be the one I'd pick.
Yeah.
Just because of his stature.
Yeah.
On a lot of it. You know, Jaden Bray or just, one of the greens or bigger guys.
As a casual guy that watched OSU football, I say casual, obviously we're OU fans, but we paid attention to the in-state guys. And it just seemed like when I had him on, and he's a name that I kept hearing. Presley with a catch. There's Presley right there. But maybe he could be a guy that could – to me, it sounded like him and Sanders were developing a rapport with each other. So maybe he could step up and have a year.
Yeah, and then you wonder, what's his brother like? Braylon Presley,
mm-hmm.
instead of Brennan. You know, Jaden Bray, the Greens, Talon Shetron, the highly recruited true freshman. And there's a ton of guys in that receiving corps. And I'm wondering if, because they have so many, the collective – it's going to be hard for one of them to kind of separate from that crowd, right, and be able to be in the consideration for mm-hmm. an All Big 12, just because the stats, I'm afraid, are going to be so spread around that it's going to be hard for one of those guys to separate. What about at OU?
Well, a lot of candidates there, considering there's only the punter. So... And then, you know, and we've said this, the big reason why there wasn't a lot of consideration outside of the punting is the punter. There's a lot of unknowns. What do you say, 40% of the roster coming back, even less actually seeing playing time. Of course, a lot of plug-in guys, Dylan Gabriel, you know, stuff like that. Maybe Theo Weiss at wideout.
Interesting.
Maybe. He just seems like a name that keeps popping up as a guy to look at.
Interesting you'd take Weiss instead of Marvin Mims.
Yeah. But again, it's a lot of unknown. I mean, do we know if Gabriel and Mims will have that connection? Theo Weiss just seems like a guy that's kind of feels like his year to break out defensively. I know I tout this guy a lot, maybe because we've seen him with our own eyes, but Ethan Downs, I've seen a lot of national guys point him out on that Oklahoma defense as a guy that he just will blend well with what Hal Venables. I keep going back to Venables coaching Dan Cody. I see that in Ethan Downs.
Oh, you hope. I mean, yeah, that would be like the best case scenario, that'd right?
Yeah. Maybe not. I mean, not eventually, not like immediately like this year, but, you know, he's just a sophomore. So maybe next year, and he might be too good to be here for a senior year. But defensively, maybe Ethan Downs on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I'll take Woody Washington.
Yeah, you like him. Yeah.
I think he's a fantastic corner, and he spent a lot of the year hurt last year. What does he look like with, you know, Jay Valet as the coach of the corners and Venables and all that? He just looks even, you know, when you think back to the guys that were on the field that day in the Peach Bowl for LSU, who they had with Jefferson and Chase and just monsters in the NFL, and Oklahoma had one dude that looked like he could hang. And it was Woody Washington,
right. Yeah.
As a true freshman, or a redshirt freshman, maybe. I can't remember if he redshirted or not. But as soon as Buki hit the dumb hit on Edwards-Helaire in the middle of the first quarter or whatever that was, Woody came in. And did he give up passes? Yes. But was he right? I mean, he looked like he belonged in very, very limited action in that season. So, you know, he
stood out in the Texas game.
He only
that
had
year.
Like four. He only had like – he had – played what, six or seven games, and he had four or five picks a year ago.
Yeah,
I mean, he seems like the guy that is just grossly underrated, but for good reason, because he's been on defenses that have been terrible throughout his career.
It's hard to put any guy right now, and it's just hard to put any OU guy on this list because of the unknowns. We don't know. It's going to have a monster breakout season. And to exceed, you know, to exceed the other guys' expectations. Does that make sense? The guys that are on the preseason list. You got to do better than those guys, for one. Then you got to be really good to even get considered, because everyone's going to start with, it's a first-year head coach. Oklahoma's defense has never been too good. Give him a couple years, and Venables will get him up there to his standard. But it can't happen immediately, can it? So it's really hard to take a guy off the OU defense and put him on this list.
Yeah, I completely agree.
But I mean, I love
the
potential.
Play.
But with all that I've said, maybe I'm just wanting like the next 2 years, like 2 or 3 years to get here now. You know, you got Ethan Downs, a sophomore. Stutzman, a sophomore. Stutzman's a guy who could maybe have a good year if he can stay healthy. So
did you find it interesting to talk it into existence,
a good defense returning to OU with Venables now.
Did you find it interesting that on the depth chart that was released Monday, not a lot of the guys on there that were in this last recruiting class, the really hyped up guys, Kobe McKenzie at linebacker, some other guys, not a lot of those guys were there. Only one of the running backs, Javonte Barnes, was in the top three. Is that good or bad?
It might be a system thing. That's, you know, you have to really, really be good to break into a depth chart as a true freshman, but that on a Venables team. And that's the thing. I mean, it's his first time as a head coach.
Is that a good sign?
I don't know.
Is he not playing the best guys? Because they're not old enough? I mean, I'm just asking.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the way that Roof, usually you see that quote he gave, it's like, this is performance driven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that could be, you know, cup half full, cup half empty approach to it. Like, wow, those guys who are highly touted, they're not performing. Or, wow, look what they got out of these guys that are already on campus and they're stepping up their game.
That's
maybe the guys are still getting used to Schmitty. I don't know.
We'll all find out. We'll all find out here in the next couple of weeks.
So Kranick there.
What else around the conference? Pick me out a guy that did not make the first team on either side of the ball from a team outside of this state. I had a text that said Eric Gray. Man, it's hard. Here's the deal about that. Good luck beating those two guys ahead of you with Deuce Vaughn and Bijan Robinson. I mean, I think the first Big 12 second team guy at running back could be a hell of a running back and not be able to break that top two.
Right.
Just because of that position this year with those two guys that are there at the top. And here's the truth of it. You're going to have to really be something special to convince the voters that you're better than those two that they already think are really, really good. Mm-hmm. And for good reason, because they are.
Yeah, I agree.
Who do you got outside of the school?
I'm just trying to find someone. Every time I think of a name, it's on this list, like Xavier Worthy, he's there. You know, maybe help me with the name. He ended the season as the Big 12 champion quarterback at Baylor.
Oh, Shapen.
Shapen. Maybe him. See if that was a fluke year, fluke thing. He was hot. He was
He was like 11 to 12 in the first half,
yeah,
or something crazy like that.
Like 11 consecutive before he. So, and there's a lot of people who are high on him too. It's funny because we have this preseason all Big 12 team from the media, and you got Sanders there. Deservedly so. I've already said that. But then when we get closer to the season, you know, all the preseason shows and preview shows, and you talk about the Big 12, and they go to Shapen first.
I haven't seen anybody say that. I've seen Gabriel.
I've seen a couple.
I've seen a bunch of people like Gabriel.
I know the game day thing was a debacle, but still got all this respect for Herbie. And
isn't that interesting? It's interesting, though. You're taking a guy that played it one game.
Yeah, I know. Well, they're looking at – it kind of reminds me how everyone talked about Spencer Rattler.
Instead of a guy that's been there for three and was the all-Big 12 quarterback a year ago.
Doesn't it feel like – it feels
is
like
to me –
is
this the most disrespected and a returning all-Big 12 quarterback has ever been? Has to be, right?
Yeah, it feels like it.
Has to be.
Feels like it. But he is on this – all Big 12 preseason teams. So not that much disrespect. But like I said, the more I get closer to the season.
You don't hear his name
everybody
ever.
Starts with the top, right? They're the defending champs. They return this guy. And, oh, this quarterback, he's the next guy. He's going to be really, really good. Watch out for Shapen. Look for this guy. I've heard that more than once.
Well, you hear Gabriel the same way. He had a great year with Levy at Central Florida. You know, the question marks, can he step up? My guy's a quarterback too. And if this team is as good as people think it can be, he's going to have to be a huge part of it. And that's Adrian Martinez at Kansas State.
I thought you were going to say yours.
Nope. Adrian Martinez at Kansas State would be my guy.
Well, I said my piece with that yesterday. My feelings on that.
Be interesting to see, because I think you're onto something there, possibly.
I think he has a better coach.
Oh, I know he's got a better coach.
I think we all know that, but does that translate into better play?
That's right. Yeah,
no, is his coach going to put him in better positions? He played really good in Norman at times. He played really good to keep his team right there. So, I'm with you on that one.
All That's right, your top one. Five games this weekend, in order. What's the number one game of the weekend in your mind?
Ohio State, Notre Dame.
I agree with that
I mean, I'm going to lean a lot on rankings because we don't know anything. This is the first game for all these teams. But high expectations for Ohio State. A lot of people, for some reason, except Feinbaum, loves Notre Dame too. It's in the shoe. Prime time. Yeah. Get the popcorn ready. I want that one.
I got that one too. What's your second one?
Cincinnati, Arkansas.
I almost put that one, too. I put it three instead.
It's Cincinnati at Arkansas, both ranked. Cincinnati coming off the playoff year. Was that a fluke, or is it real? In Arkansas, this is the start of their gauntlet schedule. And can they – I mean, woo-poo-piggy, what do you say?
Pig-suey.
I almost went there.
I almost went there because the one I put number two – I just did it because of the rankings. I don't think it's going to be as good a game, and that's Oregon-Georgia.
Okay.
I would I almost flipped those two, but I go to Oregon, Georgia 2, and then Cincy, Arkansas 3.
I'm looking at entertainment value, but I think Cincy, Arky can be a really fun game.
Oh, I do too.
So you put Oregon, Georgia there. Okay.
I put Oregon, Georgia 2, Cincinnati, Arkansas 3. Who's your third?
Utah at Florida.
I've got that one in
Feels kind of like a trap game for Utah. There are a lot of people's Pac-12 favorites. This is in the swamp. Florida, the new head coach, he needs to start off with a bang. That could be really entertaining, too.
All right. I said my three. What's number four on your list?
Oregon, Georgia.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to be much of a game. So that's why it's down there.
I've got West Virginia at Pitt, the backyard brawl.
Yeah.
Coming up tomorrow night at 6 o'clock.
Is the nastiness rivalry still there?
That's what I can't wait to find out.
Yeah.
If it's just a football game, it's too high. But if it's the nasty that it was, I mean, think back to 2007 season, Pat White, Steve Slayton, they are on the road to the BCS title game, and a crappy Pitt team beat them 13-9 on their home field to knock them out of it.
Yep.
That was maybe the height of the nasty. Let's hope it is. I hope it is. That's why I put them up that high. What's your fifth?
Kind of a sneaky game that no one's really talking about, but BYU traveling to South Florida.
I put Utah and Florida as number five.
Okay.
I don't trust Billy Napier and the Gators just yet, but it is, like you said, in the swamp, traveling all the way across the country, first game, see if they can put a scare into the Utes or even pull the upset, because you know who goes into the Florida next, into the swamp next week, Jared.
Who?
Big Blue.
Oh, really?
Florida with a big chance to get that thing started out on the right track.
Yeah.
With Utah and the surprise Kentucky Wildcats. Hey, you still got a few days. Got till Saturday to get signed up for the Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em Contest. 42 brave souls out there. Had around 80 last year. So did some of you get unbrave?
Well, when something's new and no one's won it ever, everybody thinks they got a chance to be the first-time winner, and then I'm just guessing some got scared off.
Scared off by Andy Peffer. Who'd ever thought those words would come out of anybody's mouth?
I don't know Andy very well. I'm not going to go there. But we've been pounding it, man. I've been putting on a promo every day.
Come on, guys. There's a few every day.
Maybe we need to. I mean, we're going to come up with the prize, and it's not just going to be.
Oh, it's going to be a good one.
A $5 coupon for ice cream. It's going to be a good one.
I mean, it was. I've got one in my head. I just want to make sure we get these things.
Right. Don't want to promise something we can't deliver. Yeah. Yeah.
We did last year, and then all of a sudden we finally got them at the end of the year, but I got nervous. We're going to run out of sporting events to send somebody to.
Oh, right.
And it turned out we finally ended up having them. But Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em, it's on ESPN's website. Or find the link on the Skinny on Sports Facebook page. It'll be fun. 10 games against the spread each and every week, all the way through the conference championship weekend. Did you see the Big 12 is renegotiating or entering into talks with their TV partners at ESPN and Fox a little bit earlier than what people expected?
Yeah, what do you think that means?
I think it's great news for the conference, and here's why. And Pete Thamel wrote an article about this on ESPN's website. You can browse through. I think the two things that it does is it gives – the current members of the conference or soon to be members of the conference, and more importantly, I think, the potential members in, say, the four corner schools that are in the Pac-12, being Utah, Oregon, the two Arizonas. Mm-hmm. It can give them concrete numbers to show them, hey, what you think you're going to get for staying in the Pac-12 pales in comparison to these, or at least that's the hope, pales into comparison of the numbers that we just got back from ESPN and Fox. So it makes sense for you to make this jump and not hang on to what could be left of the Pac-12 until Oregon and Washington go to the Big Ten.
Okay.
So that's one. Two, it also helps because at least with the contracts that are in place when they're supposed to run out, the Big 12 is behind the Pac-12 in order. So the Pac-12 stuff runs out 2024. The Big 12 stuff would run out at 2025, right? So 3 years until they're a year behind. The networks agreeing to do this almost feels like the networks are trying to push the Big 10, the Big 12 out in front of the Pac-12. The Pac-12 have already started this. And I would say that from every report that's been out there, losing USC and UCLA, the numbers came back from ESPN at least were way low in what what ESPN would be willing to do TV-wise for the Pac-12 without those two schools.
Well, yeah, why would you – no offense to the rest of the Pac-12. I keep pausing there because they're almost not 12 anymore. But why – yeah, no one's tuning in to watch those.
Yeah, that's
right.
You
know, unless it's a big game against another conference or, you know, like we mentioned, Utah and Florida. Well, a lot of people are going to be tuning in because it's the SEC in Florida, albeit still unranked. But if it's Utah versus give me a team.
Yeah.
You know?
Oregon State. Somebody's still there.
It's just, yeah.
Did you happen – speaking of TV numbers, did you see the number that Nebraska and Northwestern got?
No.
Oh, my gosh. It's like 4.5 million.
Well, they were the only show happening
sure, but that,
at that time. And big names. Bigger
really?
Names of – I mean, not as big name. Anyways.
That's up like –
still Nebraska.
That's up 35% from Nebraska's game last year in week zero against Illinois. Surprising to me.
But
– they played the same time.
Right.
Only show in town.
Where, though?
Oh, you think the game being in Ireland mattered?
I do. I think it's cool.
35% worth?
I liked it. I was like, this is cool. I want to see what it looks like in Ireland. It would have been really cool if the original plan was Notre Dame, right?
Right.
Way back before COVID hit.
Notre Dame and Navy, I think.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Now that game would have been fun to watch in Ireland. And then I think there was the storyline intrigue of, can Scott Frost get it going? What's Casey Thompson look like?
Yeah,
and then just people just starved for college football.
Yeah,
but
game for game, year over year, 35% increase. I thought that was pretty wild, and maybe it was Ireland that people wanted to see. But back to the Big 12. Point being, there. I mean, like you said, Pac-12 number. They're not drawing that. I don't care if they're the only ones playing on the moon. They're not. Their numbers are way lower than that. And so this, I think, to me, this signals ESPN and Fox are pushing the Big 12 ahead of the Pac-12 in their minds, which in turn means the Pac-12 is going to go away as a Power 5-type conference. Now, it might be able to string together what's going to be left with, say, I don't know, if Stanford and Cal go with Oregon and Washington. You're left with Oregon State and Washington State. Then do they try to get some San Diego State, Boise, you know, that kind of guy, like recreate a WAC or make a bigger WAC or whatever that might, or Mountain West or whatever that might be. But the days of the Pac-12 being any sort of player in the national championship, the playoff, are over.
Right.
At that point. So I think there's a lot of good news here for the Big 12. With ESPN and Fox agreeing to do this. One question that people around here are going to have is, does this change the realignment calendar, specifically for Oklahoma and Texas?
I was talking to a friend about this the other day. I think it's happening. I think this is the last year of OU in Texas. I don't know if this was – well, it's probably a big reason why. Now that I think about it, now I say it out loud. And I think maybe that's why – maybe the Big 12 knows and the networks know that this needs to – something needs to happen, and it needs to happen fast, because it sounds like perhaps probably some good sources are telling them OU and Texas plan to leave at the end of this year. And I was talking to a buddy about this, and he said, well, how come they have an announcement? It's like, I think they're going to wait till the end of the football season. We might hear something around – New Year's or something. Said this is it. We're at
so where are they getting
July
the money?
1. I don't know. I don't know if they're just going to pony up the dough. I don't know.
Here's how they get the money. I'll tell you.
How's that?
ESPN negotiates his contract early.
Yeah.
And incentivizes the Big 12 members that are staying with more money.
We're going to go get a loan, and maybe the Biden administration will forgive it.
Well, you know, maybe that could happen too.
School loan, yeah.
But that's why I think ESPN is so interested in doing this.
Right.
Is to be able to, let's say, make up the amount of money that maybe the Big 12 would agree to slash off of those exit fees. It's all made back up in extra revenue coming from a new deal with ESPN and Fox. ESPN specifically, though, because ESPN has the rights to the SEC, and the faster they can get those two brands into their brand, the better.
Yeah.
To start generating the revenue that they want to generate to pay for the amount of money that they're shelling out to televise SEC football. And so that makes perfect sense to me why ESPN specifically would want to try to almost even eliminate the Pac-12 as an option. Because now you've just got four mouths to feed. And you know, they're obviously hooked in with the SEC, want to keep some Big 12 for, they're going to have to fill content somehow. And then some ACC stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting to me to see how this all plays out, because it feels like you've got one network splitting money between three brands, three conferences, and one conference splitting their rights between three networks, right? It's like the exact inverse from each other. And it's almost not even, to me, like the game has become who's bigger, the Big Ten or ESPN. It's almost like it's not even SEC anymore.
That's funny.
It's not conference to conference. It's like the Big Ten model versus the ESPN model now.
That is funny. That's what it feels like. Yeah.
And money-wise, I mean, at some point, does ESPN run out of it? And at that point, do we start seeing them push towards, say, you know, they're 16 now, take the four best ACC, the four best Big 12, or whatever the eight other best are, we're going to need you guys to merge those into the SEC all at one, all as one, and then we'll up that amount, and these others can kind of go away, and they can be regional conferences as well. With the remnants of the Big 12 and the ACC, however that might be, if it proves to be too much of a burden to try to support all three. I think what the Big 10 did was genius.
Yeah, it really put the pressure on ESPN.
Yeah, it did. Immensely. You know what else is going to put the pressure on?
I mean, it's always been ESPN versus those other networks, you know?
Right.
But now it's like so much on paper where it's like, okay, they're all, it's in a like weird way, they're all teaming up against ESPN.
Yeah, and using the clout of the Big Ten. And that's why, why I bring up those numbers. I mean, that would be, you know who's not getting $4.5 million? I don't care where they're playing or when. Texas Tech and Kansas State or something like, that's about what this was.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the quality of Nebraska and Northwestern, that's akin to a Tech Kansas State game, or
yeah,
you know, something like that. Guess what? 4.5 million people ain't watching that. But the Big Ten has seemingly, have they become the biggest dog on the block all of a sudden?
Financially, they're fighting that with the SEC, sure.
And the universities are so huge, and the alumni bases are so huge with all of those schools in that Midwest. Maybe they have. I'm not talking about on the field.
No, I know what you're talking about.
In the boardrooms and in the TV game and in the conference realignment game, it almost does feel to me like the Big Ten has surpassed everything in college football. from that standpoint.
It does.
Kudos to, I mean, just what, think about what's happened in like a year and a half's time. They went from not going to play. It's, think about this. Looking back on it, if you're Greg Sankey at the SEC, you were going to, do you still, I don't know, behind the scenes, was he talking to Kevin Warren, saying, hey, you guys got to play, you guys got to play. If that was the case, looking back, was that the wrong move? Because if the SEC is the only one, and the Big 12 is going to play too, so if those are the only two that are going to play, and the alliance of the ACC, Big 10, and Pac 12 don't, well, that just pushes them further behind.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you end up playing five games. Ohio State's in the playoff at 5-0 or 6-0, whatever it was. And now fast forward another year and a half, and oh my gosh, it's like the Big 10. It's like that kid that you didn't see all summer between like freshman and sophomore year came back. You're like, whoa, what happened? Well, that guy became a monster. What happened to him?
Right.
Golly, what you been doing? Oh, I was, you know, like went with Rocky to Russia and just trained for 3 months.
Cue the montage.
Yeah. No, it's very, very interesting to me that this was announced today that the Big 12 and ESPN and Fox are
right. I think that you're right. I think this is kind of the writing on the wall for OU and Texas's exit.
And the Pac-12's demise. And yeah. I think it feels like it's all coming full circle with this deal, especially if it gets done.
Yeah.
Now, they could lowball the Big 12 and we can have a totally different conversation in a month, but that's what it feels like. All right, everybody, have a great Wednesday. We will be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.